Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Today, we are discussing after-death destiny. Destinies, because there's not just one destiny for each person. Everyone has a different destiny after death. So we're going to be discussing that. But first, I want to invite everybody that listens to our show to join us here on Blog Talk Radio, follow our show, like our pages on Facebook, Neil Baker Psychic and Neil and Kristen Baker. I think you follow Neil and Kristen Baker, like Neil Baker Psychic. Anyway, those pages are there for you. And what else? 562-596-7818 is the number to call after the show for further conversation. But for today, 914-338-0164, I should say during this hour, that's the number to call, 914-338-0164. And we hope that you press 1 so we know that you want to speak with us. That shows that your hand is raised while you're in the queue. But after death, so many different options depending on how the life is lived, right?
Yes, right. I mean, assuming we all have basically a destiny. Most of us do carry a destiny in life. Some of us are very aware about our destiny. It's still a mystery. A lot of people just struggle trying to find out what their purpose is in life. But assuming that we do have a destiny, that means we have to, at the point at which we die, we should have reached our destiny. We should have reached the conclusion of our life. And assuming that we did and we've completed everything, then the afterlife begins anew. There's a new journey to be taken. Maybe it won't be filled with karma. Maybe you'll be coming back to the earth with a fresh start. Maybe you'll be coming back with some karma left over. Or maybe you will be traveling forward into the astral planes and not even returning to the planet. But for the most part, the majority of us, or probably the bulk of us, have a destiny of some purpose. And that is individualized. Some of us have destinies in regard to family. Some of us have destinies in regard to occupation. And some of us have destinies in regard to perhaps education, discovering something, learning something. So all of this is all part of just natural common sense. But when we get to the idea of what happens after we die, first of all, what's tabulated is how much you accomplished towards your goal, towards your destiny. Did you fulfill your mission?
Right.
Did you fulfill the purpose?
And most people, if I'm speaking generally, are not thinking about what needs to be done in order for there to be a different destiny as opposed to returning to the planet after death, because most people are living for the planet. You know, it's very easy to get distracted by the demands of everyday life.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we are on the planet, so there's a reality-based foundation there. That we're in the planet, we have to live in the planet. So that, therefore, we have to have jobs, we have to have families for the most part, and we have to have some kind of purpose as far as the planet itself goes. Where the main debate occurs in terms of the attitude of the mind, body, and soul is in the department of the soul. The soul itself occupies two different regions. One, it occupies the earth, because the soul is very connected to the body, And the soul is dependent on what the body has accomplished in each lifetime. So in other words, the soul of a human being hoping that the body of that human being has accomplished everything so the soul can be released and forever released from the earth and then join the spirit and go forward into the astral realm. If that isn't the case, then the soul has to return back to the planet, perhaps in a new body, with the same soul, and continue on with the earthly destinies as to what has to be accomplished. So the first thing is that happens when one dies is there's an sort of evaluation as to exactly how well you did on the planet, what you got accomplished.
Unless someone goes straight to transcendence, surely from that life, you don't go to
people do.
You don't go into evaluation when you're transcending. Generally, unless there's a question.
Right. The general public, especially in the Western world, they believes that you die, and if you're basically a good person, you go to heaven, and you're forever peacefully.
Right, yeah, you're resting in peace.
Existing in heaven.
Resting in peace. You're sleeping.
Well, I suppose for a lot of us that's true. There's death and there's transcendence. There isn't a return to the planet. The soul is merged into the spirit, and the spirit is forever lasting in the heavenly sphere. Okay, fine. But if there's work still left to be done, then what does that say about the soul and the body? We just can't, in life you just can't do unfinished work. Even in the Bible it says it is finished. If you don't finish the job you're supposed to do on the planet, and that finish is a big term, because it means the finishing of physicality, the finishing of the intellect, the finishing of spirit, the finishing of all the things
creativity,
you're supposed to do,
all of that, relationships. Right.
And if you don't do that, there's going to be some energy that's going to bring you back. In addition to that, if you've created new karma, you've killed somebody, you've robbed, you've done something of very negative consequence, then that's also going to compel you to come back. Where we tend to differ is that the Western world tends to say that we have two divisions. You go to hell, well, for the most part, you go to heaven or you go to hell. You're either going to go to heaven or you're going to go to hell. If you're a good person, you go to heaven. If you're a bad person, really bad person, you go to hell.
Right,
and this division.
Regarding the evaluation, when you've done something very heinous, often you won't go to an evaluation right away either. That happens a little bit later if we're talking on a linear time scale.
Yeah, that can happen later. I mean, there's
you
all
get you know banished for a while.
There's all different kinds of scenarios, suicide.
Right, you don't go to evaluation generally.
Later on the planet, a little bit longer
right away.
Same kind of evaluation.
Yeah. Okay. So.
But we tend to think that this is black and white. And for good reason. I mean, the Bible says it, and so we believe it, and different forms of philosophy will say it. Now, of course, that doesn't assume that everyone feels that way. There are people who are atheists. There are people who believe they go to different planes. I mean, not everyone believes that there isn't even a heaven or a hell.
Right. In the Eastern religions, there's more of the idea of returning to the planet to resolve and finish, and you know the fact that there's karma. But these things are not talked about in Western religions as much.
No. But still, I mean, the Eastern religions is still part of the planet, still part of part of the philosophy of humankind in terms of what
yeah,
how to interpret the afterlife. So
they're a little bit more
due.
Yeah, definitely.
Now some people may be saying, you know what, what is that my concern? I'll know when I get there. I'm just going to try to do the best I can down here. I'm more concerned with the problems I have down here. Even when people hear these kinds of discussions, typically their questions upon hearing these discussions when question time comes up is going to be, well, do you see me getting that job? Am I going to be moving? I'm really bothered about a relationship. Now, these things are important, because we're saying they're woven into the fabric.
Right, because
of
if you have gone through all your lifetimes and never have had an actualized relationship, something that's healthy, obviously there's going to be the need to establish that before you leave the planet, for instance. But there's a balance.
Well, there's a balance, yes. In many different aspects, there's a balance.
You know, if there's karma in relationship, you're not going to be able to transcend.
Well, yeah. And you know, that determines, you know, what body you're talking to. Some people just don't have any interest in spiritual matters. They're not interested in the afterlife. They're not, you know, their belief is you live and you die, and this is it.
Right,
and,
but Jen,
and there's no way to convince them. They just feel that this is the beginning and end of existence.
Right, but if we're talking about people that are calling and asking questions about, or you know, seeking the help of psychics to answer their questions about their day-to-day life, there has to be some kind of belief that there is something else going on besides the physical realm.
Perhaps. I mean, most questions are questions of immediacy. And what I mean by that is immediacy are the things at hand, job, family, relationships, you know, I have a problem in business, something like that. So those are concerns of immediacy, meaning that they are contained within the physical breath of one lifetime. There isn't really too many people that say, you know, I'm really wondering what's going to happen to me when I leave this earth and what can I do to prepare for that? And how can I enhance that journey so that when I do expire, I go into a world that's going to be so much more fantastic than the one I've ever experienced, and I will never have to come back and experience the things that I did in the former lifetime. Now there are people who obviously adapt to that kind of thinking. They're consumed by it, some people.
Subscribe.
I'm not saying that not everyone, you know, has this simplistic thought. And we're not putting down people who are concerned about the immediacy of life, because that's part of the function of existence as well. But when consciousness is raised, when the mind, the human mind is raised to a level of something beyond one's own ego, one's own sense of their own environment and the things that are contained within it, then we're getting into more of a highly evolved brain. And every brain has that place, but it just may be, the lights may not be turned on then. I mean, some people are very committed to the planet and they're very astute in their studies and they're very concerned. Politicians, I mean, the authentic noteworthy politicians that really care about politics and government and taking care of people and the way the society is functioning. I mean, those are very important people, and they will live and die being very socially conscious.
Right, and
they
there
think
is
outside
merit
of themselves.
And so, what we're saying is that there is merit to that, but it isn't also it doesn't encapsulate the whole circumference of what needs to be done on the planet.
That's right. We're talking about that darker region of the mind where the lights aren't always apparently on, that starts to consider the walk of life or the walk of the afterlife. And it's a kind of a poor term because it's not so much afterlife that we're speaking of, because we're talking about life merging or evolving into an eternal life. So it's not really afterlife. It's the extension of physical life, the extension of the physical planet, and the way that our physical brains occupy the world. We start off with basically, when you study the history of humankind, you get into the idea that we start off as hunter-gatherers. Now, hunters, that the hunting aspect of the human evolution is that we come into the planet and we hunt for our food. We're hunters. We have to survive on a purely physical level. The whole world, it pertains to the seasons, migrations, wild animals, how we eat, how we survive, the dwelling place, the cave. As that that's the basic backbone of the brain, of the consciousness. But even what's strange is that even when we get in, when we study the history of prehistoric man, the woman, we get into the idea of something that's eerily going on. When we look at the cave paintings and we start to see that there are strange drawings, strange symbolic drawings. Some of them indeed depict the hunt, but there are sometimes
stuff
flying objects,
aliens,
and stars and things, strange looking creatures. When you get into the astral realm, perhaps this is part of that depiction. Now, that isn't to say that some of the prehistoric inhabitants of the planet didn't take mushrooms or hallucinate or have some kind of weird food they were eating or became drunken with something or on some seed or plant or even allowed the hallucination of fire in a cave to draw different images onto the cave walls to where images were distorted and changed. And it allowed the brain to start to elaborate and think about other things.
Right, or it could have connected those people to, you know, a more supernatural experience, facilitated their drug use, facilitated a more supernatural experience.
Right.
Which is possible. Go ahead.
It must have been very difficult for prehistoric inhabitants of the planet to analyze day to night. Why did the day suddenly turn into dusk and then ultimately turn into night? And at night, there was a great display of stars. The sky changed. The sun was gone. This other light came up into the sky, the moon. And there were shooting stars back then. There was no pollution, man-made pollution. And so there was this display of nighttime energies, and stars changed. And then the way that the sun moved across the sky. And with that came different migrations of animals, and different animals came out at night and strange things like that. So the prehistoric human beings, they must have started to think beyond themselves, that there was something else operating all of this. Now, at the beginning, it was mythology, you know, with the gods, the goddesses, whatever it may be, depending on the culture or the society you're dealing with. But at some point, a man and a woman had to start to think that something else was going on than the immediacy of physical survival and all the attributes that go along with it, the clothing and fur and skill making with the crude tools and things like that, spears. So there had to be something beyond. Now, you were going to ask a question.
I was just going to ask what your opinion is about the occurrences of you know, alien visitation during that period of time as opposed to now. I mean, obviously, people have experiences in present day with UFOs, so on and so forth, abductions. But do you think, Neil, personally, that there were more of those interactions in that primitive time because there was less involvement?
I do.
I think that
the planet was fresh, life was new.
Right. There was less, life was pared down. It was more about survival rather than acquisition as it is now, you know?
Right.
There's a lot.
I mean, the mind can imagine all kinds of things. Maybe we were dropped off from another planet. And we really aren't. I mean, we're called Earthlings, but you know, if we conquer Mars and we go on Mars and somebody's born on Mars, they're going to be a Martian. And that is to say that over time, whatever that human person is, over time that they will evolve and become more Martian-like, in other words, more alien-like from the planet Earth. But so we have different concepts. Are we part of a vast cosmic experiment? I mean, who is really God? And why does God say to Adam and Eve, we better be careful, he might become as one of us. One of us. Even God says that in the Bible. So there's more than one God, and gods and gods and gods. So there's all this conception and analyzation of exactly how we were created. The other aspect of that is perhaps we were dropped off from another planet. Maybe there was another solar system whereby we came. Why is life so diverse? Well, the Bible says it created the animals, the mammals, the fishes, the birds. But why is this diversity of life so deep and so vast that even today we're discovering new forms of life that have yet to be discovered and of such variation? Then we get into the idea that if there were actually aliens, not cosmic, you know, spirits and gods and goddesses and all that, but actual
from other physical life, not just spiritual life.
Correct.
Like in physical bodies, which aliens are, obviously. It's from a different physicality.
That's right.
Versus angels, which don't have bodies.
And even in the prehistoric drawings, there are people that look like they're wearing space helmets. The Bible mentions there were giants in the earth in the olden days. I mean, who are these giants that they're talking about? But the idea
could they have been dinosaurs? I mean, dinosaurs were giants.
No, man never really encountered the dinosaur. The dinosaur,
that's right.
The age of the dinosaur and the reptiles
was prior, who knows?
What Cro-Magnon and the Neanderthal man, they might have seen mammoths, you know, those large elephants with the tusks and things like that, but they didn't really. No one saw a Tyrannosaurus Rex or anything like that.
Who knows?
But then the idea comes to the point to where, what is this diversity, and how did we create so many different human types of human beings? People who are white, people who are black, people who are from the Far East. I mean, just all these different variations. How did that come from the original seed, if that be the case? There must have had to have been something going on that contradicts the standardized thinking of sheer biblical text. Something had to have happened. Well, the answer may be that maybe that's the way God did it. It just wasn't mentioned. You got to read between the lines. God can do anything. And the famous Scopes trial, he believed Darryl. They were debating about the theory of evolution,
which. And we believe in.
We believe in that there's evolution, but we don't contradict that with the sense of sheer absolute cosmic creation.
Right. They can coexist in terms of, you know, occurring.
In the idea of
7 days in the Bible may have been many thousands of years in real life. So.
Right. And there is a gradual formation of the human form in the womb, where it takes on the idea of a fish, and it looks much, then it starts to look very much like a pig. And incidentally, they say that pigs have a brain almost the capacity of a man, not quite, or a woman. So this idea that we have evolved, we even have a tailbone, that we have evolved from a lower species, and that there's a succession of levels of growth and maturity and bodily structure and intelligence as it evolves through time, then we have to start to conceptualize, well, what happens now once we die? If the question for those who says, that's not a question to me. I die. That's it. Turn to dust. I had a grandmother that just believed, that's it. You turn to dust. That's all there is to it. And there was no belief in the afterlife. That was never a problem. And even when I tried to debate with her, there was just nothing. There was nothing there. She would acknowledge cosmic things and strange things, but she just thought that was part of the physicality of existence
life.
Anyways. When we get into the idea of that the soul is imprinted with a destiny, now we're getting into something else, because if the soul is imprinted with a destiny, what put that destiny there? This is no longer a matter of survival, of coming to the planet and deciding how we as a species have to survive by eating and shelter and things like that. Now there's this idea that somewhere within our body, there's another operation going on and a whole other energy and entity within ourselves. Not to mention that there are entities outside of ourselves. Now we're looking inwardly and we're saying there may be more to existence than just the body.
Okay, can we go back to one point before we move forward?
Yeah.
Because I want to state that, you know, in actuality, which is why I mentioned this previously, there are scientists that do believe that dinosaurs and humans existed simultaneously. I mean, we're not going to go into that examination here on the show, but I just wanted to make that statement. Okay, so moving forward.
Maybe up for debate.
Yeah, it is up for debate. But anyway.
In my education growing up, dinosaurs we call them beings, Olympians, did not coexist at the same time.
Well, you went to college a long time ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so we're moving forward. We're moving.
Cave University.
Okay.
So now we're looking at this idea, and this is all in abstract. We're dealing in such abstractions that it's almost peaks to surrealism. I mean, how do we define soul? The only way we can define the soul really is that the human brain can even come the concept. And so now we look at the human brain. There's a mystery in the human brain, maybe in the pineal gland, maybe somewhere deep in the darker recesses of the brain that maybe even started before man even put on a coat and tie or a woman a dress, that there's something beyond the body. So some philosophers will say there's got to be a soul, otherwise humankind wouldn't have come up with the concept. There's got to be a spirit, otherwise humankind wouldn't have come up with the concept. I mean, you know, we've got to consider that if the mind can become preoccupied with a thought, then that thought somewhere in time and space has to exist. So now we begin to ponder that journey.
Where did that originate from?
And that journey is what links us to the idea of destiny. Because the destiny of the body is to get through the planet staying alive. That's Darwinism. Survival of the fittest. So do we have a destiny? Do we have a destiny we can count on and define? Yes. We live. We survive. We try to survive under the best possible means. We try to have the most comfort. And then we die. That's a destiny. The destiny of the physicality of life is that we die at a ripe old age and we sustained ourselves properly throughout time and space until that time arrives. So there's a destiny. And then the destiny of humankind would be what? Death. That's the destiny of humankind on the physical realm. Everyone has a common destiny, and that common destiny is death. That's physicality.
Right.
That's the physical.
So, you know, just another point, food for thought. If people originated from another cosmic realm or from another planet and then somehow ended up on the Earth plane, is it possible that some people will move to another physicality after death?
Sure. I mean,
instead of into the spirit form? I mean, what kind of karma does that involve?
Sure,
I mean, we'd have to look at that.
When we get into the imaginings of the afterlife, anything can be possible. There's no clear answer. There's no clear answer. You can debate it until kingdom come. Even that's debatable. But we don't have a definition yet of that. The only thing we can define, and we're still unraveling the mysteries of that, is what happens between birth and death.
On the planet.
The human being matures, they get old, their mind develops, their organs, their bodies. We've learned medicine, we've learned all kinds of things. And so we've tried to clearly define what happens between birth and between birth and death. And that is the definition of destiny on the first level. There's nothing about the afterlife, there's nothing about heaven, there's nothing about the soul, there's nothing about the spirit. You know, maybe you get a creative doctor and the doctor might mention a soul or a spirit, but most doctors are not, they're not treating the soul or the spirit. And we're talking about the basic mechanics of medicine. They're dealing with the body. The only thing that alludes to the spirit would converge with the idea of psychology, which takes in the mind. And then we get into the mind, which is the only part of the body, aside from the miraculous aspect of creation and procreation, and the sperm and the egg and offsprings, which takes on a sort of surrealistic notion of existence. But when we get into the mind and psychology, now we're getting into the idea that there is something else going on besides the sheer
physicality of life,
of the body. Because the mind thinks, and the mind examines, the mind imagines, and the mind distorts reality. So if the mind distorts reality, and the mind is able to abstract into an aspect that's considered language, and language evolves into all different kinds of theories about life, now we start to open up the doorknob to the afterlife, to the idea that there is something beyond the body, contained maybe within the brain, other than just sheer physicality. So now we get into some interesting notions, not to mention that we're also following the lineage of thinking from the time that man and woman first began to ponder what is existence and what do we reach out for. So all of that becomes part of now the idea of not just religion, philosophy, spirituality, psychology, but now we get into the idea that there's something operating in the ultimate development of any human being that is beyond the scope of sheer just growth and organs and maturity and aging. There's something going on in the thought process as we begin to ponder this. And then we get into the idea of the mystics and different forms of philosophy and concepts like that, which gradually takes us even further into the concept of what is destiny. What is the destiny?
Right. But even in the science of philosophy, many people believe that it's, you know, that nothing exists after the physical breath is expired.
Well, some people, that's true. They become nihilist thinking, and you can get everybody from me to Camus to demonstrate to us what is the meaning of mankind. And we get into the idea of, you know, it's become such a coined term now, existential threat. But really, existentialism didn't come from the idea that it was an adjective for the noun threat. And existentialism comes into the idea that we are living in a meaningless universe, meaning that the universe is not really directed by any cosmic force. There is no God. There is nothing that's controlling us or directing us, that the sheer matter of energy that we are experiencing is in fact all in the occupation of the mind. So now what happens is, how do we define the pure essence of existence in terms of existentialism? We define it as that humankind puts their own meaning into life, and that we are in direct control of our own life. And that becomes a destiny in and of itself as well.
I want to mention something for those that are tuning in today live. We're not recognizing callers in the queue. Something is wrong with Blog Talk Radio's interface. So when I call in, you know, I'm trying to do the technical aspect in addition to participating here in the conversation. But if people are calling in, we are not able to see you in the queue today.
Oh, so how do we?
Have no way to resolve this except to contact Blog Talk Radio as we continue the show and let them know what problems we're having. What's happening is, it's very strange. It's saying the switchboard is stating that they're waiting for the host. However, we're connected.
Are we being heard?
We're being heard, but there's no evidence of anybody calling in. So I'm sure we have callers. We've been kind of wondering what's going on.
I'm sure we've dropped some callers because maybe you find the topic not very
exciting. No, that's not what it is. What I'm stating to you listening. What I'm stating to you is that when I call in on my phone, I can hear the show, but I don't see my phone number in the queue.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not able to see the callers.
I'm hearing that. What I'm saying is that maybe the people who are listening and realizing they're not coming on the show or they're not going to be heard or addressed might be dropping.
But for those listeners who are finding the topic noteworthy
or maybe in the archives, we should probably try to hold the floor.
Well, we're going to continue. I'm going to, try to solve this perhaps while we're talking. But you continue to talk, Neil, and
I'll try to do the technical thing. let's engage. And, this is too bad we don't have other callers, but because I don't want to.
Well, we probably do have callers, but no, it's an interesting topic. And at least we have an opportunity to talk a little bit because so often we're not able to talk at all.
Right.
So go ahead.
We were leading off, and this is such a crash course in the attitude of what is a destiny that is kind of inadequate, but insufficient. So we get into the idea that as we were branching into the thought that the mind itself is the first form of destiny, aside from the sheer brackets of physicality, that the mind itself transcends physicality and starts to ponder life beyond just physical survival. That there's something else going on. So as that approaches, the mind starts to evolve. Even on a physical level, we went from hunter, we create agriculture, we farm, we're gatherers, we start to stay more stationary, and we're more aware of that we don't have to go out and hunt. Now we can plant and cultivate. That brings on all other kinds of things. That gets us away from more of the tribal aspect. And then ultimately, this in time and space starts to lead to serfdom and servants and slaves and how we start to build in terms of civilizing our planet, not as hunters within the tribal sense, but as gatherers, cultivators, people who irrigated and farmed and things like that and needed work and things. So they needed work hands, and all of this started the big role of getting out of the sense of primitive survival. Now we're getting into something different, and we start to formulate a whole different aspect of moving with the world as the world becomes more globular. And then we get into the idea of wheat, and we get into the idea of harvesting, and
about
all
corn.
Of that. All of that. Well, wheat is actually the common terminology of how we civilized ourselves in terms of feeding the populace, the worldly populace.
Ancient grains. Anyway, making a joke.
So as that formulated, and we began to think of the globular planet, what also amounts to that is the world isn't big enough for us. There's got to be something beyond the world. So now we started to think about flight. And we start to think about transcending the gravitational pull of the planet. And that led to the idea of flight, taking it from mythology to reality. And then finally we get into the space age, and we're getting into looking at other frontiers and trying to discover that there is something beyond our planet. And so there's something beyond just the sheer destiny of the Earth. That destiny must have destiny must occupy something other than just the basis of what the Earth can handle. So if we can prove that there's life on other planets, as opposed to just believing that there's angels and guides and spirit and God and all this stuff, if we can prove that there's life on other planets, we can start to get out of the confinement of what is the physicality of our planet. We already know that we're beyond the physicality because we have the solar system. We have different planets. We've got ultra-solar system. We've got all kinds of things.
The physicality of this planet.
Yes.
Because there's physicality on other planets, as we were stating earlier.
So obviously, even Carl Sagan says, how can there be only one Earth? There's billions and billions and billions of planets like ours out there in space and time. And even Einstein believed that there was something beyond. And he even approached the concept of God as a metaphorical possibility that there is something out there beyond the scientific reaches of the brain. So the idea now that we may not just be attuned to what we consider not more or less the destiny of our own lives, life to death, but the destiny of the soul, meaning that the soul may come back to the planet. But now we're talking about the destiny of the spirit moving into other realms in the astral plane, in the cosmos, in what we define metaphorically as heaven. There are many rooms in my father's mansion. What the heck? If there's all these places out there in space where we can formulate a new concept of destiny, then it might be noteworthy within the human body to try to capture the idea that somewhere we hold the secrets of the universe. Now, people will call that the Hall of Records and all this stuff that we are locked into the cosmic mind. There's also the idea that if you rub your eyes, if you rub your eyes and then you stop for a minute and you keep your eyes closed, that you start to see, it looks like an airport at night from the sky. You start to see stars and lights and things like this. There's the idea that you're looking at the cosmic map of the universe, that it's locked somewhere in our brains. And so we all have this deep, deep key to the secret of the universe, to the secret of existence. And we are but a small dot. We're just a little tiny dot on the page. It's like looking at it like a dot on a page of a long page of paragraphs. We're just one dot. There are other sentences, other paragraphs, other thoughts. So we're just occupying this one little dot that assumes that we live and we die. We can all agree on that. And that within life and death is the concept of destiny, meaning the ultimate destiny. What is man's and woman's ultimate destiny? As we said before, death. Life leads to death. That's our destiny. And what we do in between defines the meaning of life. We make our meaning, our purpose. We can either lay in bed and that becomes our meaning, or we can get out of bed and create and work and perform and fall in love and create. We can do all those things, but all of that is still contained with the idea that destiny is in the eyes of the beholder, that we create our own destiny. So there's no great debate about ultimately what destiny is. Destiny is self-creation.
Right, but whether the destiny is a physical destiny or a higher destiny is going to be determined by the actions of the person on the physical plane.
That's the big question.
Right.
What is above us that may be directing our destiny? Now that becomes more of a religious philosophical question. There's nothing here scientific. Science isn't really examined. Well, what does God think of this proposal? What is God's idea? There's no idea within science itself that credits the notion that God is in the hands of that man and women are in the hands of God. There's Hippocratic oath, there's ethics, there's a moralistic and ethical standard of medicine, and of course medicine is to sustain life, and the advancement of medicine is to elongate life. So that is fine, and to maintain the healthy balance of life so that we can sustain ourselves so that can go on and meet our destinies within the planet. So, but science doesn't discriminate. Whether a patient comes to a doctor who is thoroughly depressed and laying in bed and has no meaning in life, but they have a backache, as opposed to a great teacher or a great businessman who also goes to a doctor and says, I got a terrible backache. I've got this problem. I need medicine to handle it. Doctors don't discriminate. between the destinies of human beings. They merely treat the human being, for the most part. I mean, we can talk about the politics of medicine and how some people are treated better than others, and we can talk about, you know, the whole health program and all that, but we're not getting into that. We're talking about the seedling of medicine, that medicine is meant to sustain life and to make life as comfortable as possible and to conquer disease and to make sure as a human species we survive. So they have that. As opposed to philosophy, which is the treatment of the mind, or psychology, which is the treatment of the mind, not of the body, but of the mind itself. Now we're getting into the ideas, are we healthy spiritually? Why must we be healthy spiritually? We know why we must be healthy physically, because if we weren't healthy physically, we wouldn't be able to move. But is it necessary in order to live and breathe to be healthy spiritually? That's the question, too, of destiny, that destiny asks. Do we need to believe in God? Do we need to believe in a destiny of the afterlife?
Well, no, because
we don't.
We don't.
But then the questions ask, why, therefore, do we imagine it? What has prompted us to start to reach out?
Well, I think there are studies that have shown that belief in something outside the physical realm actually results in people being healthier physically.
Even if
there is nothing outside the physical realm, the belief that there is can help people live longer lives.
That's the matter of the mind. So when we get into holistic thinking and that the mind, I mean, even the best doctors will say, you know, your attitude is going to help a lot in terms of your recovery phase. So, of course, there's attitude involved. And the mind does direct the body. I mean, we could probably will ourselves to die if we wanted to, or we can will ourselves to live. So we get into this concept of will. Is will connected to destiny? I mean, what is will? You can't find it anywhere but in the mind or in the passion of the mind. So will is not only the will to survive in terms of eating, drinking, shelter, but the will to survive in terms of attitude. Because, you know, that's where the great division of humankind exists. We can take a depressed person and put him in bed who has no really will to do anything, but we can keep them alive. If they, you know, they like ice cream, they like cake, they like hamburgers, they're eating, they like to sit and watch TV, they're surviving. But there's no real will to live. There's a certain will to survive. But when we're talking about very depressed people, at least some kind of functional depression, where there's a consciousness that would even say, I want to just lay in bed and do nothing. I'm too depressed to do anything. There's still a will to survive because in most cases, those people will sustain themselves to some physical level, on some physical level. Unless we get into people who are obviously suicidal or are trying to commit suicide by starvation or something like that. So when we get into the idea of will, now we're getting also into the idea of the beginning of destiny, because will is related to destiny. What do we have a will for? We even have a will in terms of, you know, will is we have a will to live. We have free will. And then we talked also about how we obstructed the terminology and corrupted it into, well, we have a will. In other words, after
like
we die,
right, what you bequeath your items, your personal belongings to.
Now that, believe it or not, is part of the extension of an afterlife. Because what we're saying is after we die, we will be alive. We will our possessions. We will our ownership of what we have accomplished and acquired to others. So we have this will. And that will now takes on the form of destiny. Because what it's really saying is that there is an extension to our physicality, to our physical life, whereby we influence those behind us, those who are still alive on the planet. And that becomes part of the ritualistic thinking too of even the burial ground where we will ourselves to have tombstones where we will ourselves to remember our births and deaths. I mean, if life is just to be lived and you live and you die.
Right, right. Why do we mark our graves?
Why do we have graves?
Right.
Why do we just throw everybody into a heap and get rid of them? Why do we remember? What is this remembrance? So we get into the idea that what are we remembering? We're remembering something about the past that has meaning for the present. And as we connect the past to the present, of course, that provides for us the explanation as to how we have will for the future. Because we're thinking of the future in advance. Even when we create our wills, we're thinking, well, I'm not dead yet, but I'm going to create a will so that when I do go, people will be taken care of. So in that aspect of the will itself, we're getting into some form of destiny. And then, of course, destiny takes on its contours and different shadings as to how things operate the way they do. So then when we get into the idea of will, now we're getting into our world, psychic, destiny, will. Well, people say, what do you see? Do you see in my future that I'm going to be in a relationship?
Well, and not only that, but they ask about their current circumstances, if those circumstances were actually destiny or if they could have been avoided.
Yes, because what they're saying is, you know, they want to know. And they want to know their future. They want to know what's going to happen. And in that form...
Right, or if they can alter the course of their future.
Yes, or alter, change. Can you actually change, transform, control? That's more of the idea of existentialism. Is that we can actually change. We may not be able to seek higher knowledge. That's where it kind of gets diffused. But we can actually be in charge of our future through the idea of will. So when we start to examine the future, and where psychics and mystics are involved. It originally was psychics and mystics were supposed to tell the sailors about their travels and what was going to happen. In the biblical days, the psychics and the mystics would tell the king what kind of weather was going to be, whether there was going to be a flood, a famine, there was going to be a plague or anything like that. So this idea, and also deaths were predicted. Beware the Ides of March, even for Julius Caesar. So this concept of what is the element of destiny to a mystic? What is the element of destiny to a psychic? And can something be read because it is groundbreaking destiny? Or can something be interpreted as the sound possibility of an outcome? But we have the sound possibility, it's sort of a contradiction in terms. You have sound possibility. Possibility presents itself as having some vagueness of energy. And this is where a lot of psychics and mystics get a little bit into trouble. Because not everything is based upon sheer prediction and destiny.
Right, so exactly. So and you can alter the course of destiny by action. So even if a psychic has a pretty solid prediction, if the subject is not working well with the psychic, they can make that prediction not occur.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times a good psychic will make a prediction, and the person that they're speaking to will alter it.
Vibrational level has to match as much as possible.
Exactly.
With the psychic.
And that gets a little tricky. I know we're running out of time. So
we are running out of time
up here, but we were able to get through the hour more or less.
Through the hour. No, it was, I mean, you know, it's good that, like I said, having a chance to talk a little bit. I'm sure we had callers, but I wasn't able to see them. When I refreshed the screen, the switchboard became active, but we haven't had anybody since.
Well, if there were any callers, anybody wants to respond to the show, how would they do that?
They can contact us on Facebook or on Block Talk Radio. We have an email address there. Some of the listeners have my personal email, but generally, you know, we deal with phone.
Yeah, give us your responses, you know, if you're in
Well, don't call us about your responses. You can email them.
Yeah, email your responses and you know, become part of the contribute something to the discussion, because it is still part of everything that we're doing, even on a personal level, when people call in with just sheer personal questions.
That's right. So do you think we should wrap up for now? We have about 2 minutes left, but we can close early. So we are back on the air Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, and hopefully we'll be able to see our callers at that time. We have to come up with our topic unless we want to continue this, because we kind of just started touching on the heart of it at the end of the show. So we may be continuing it on Friday, this discussion about the afterlife. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will speak with you on Friday. Bye-bye.